For those of you who don't know, the Hidden Door Festival is an epic multi-arts festival in the heart of Edinburgh. This year, a dedicated group of artists and organizers took over the vault below Jeffrey Street, right opposite Waverley train station. There were more than a dozen stone vaults to pop into, filled with paintings, sculpture, installations, workshops, music, film, and poetry. There were strange, endless corridors, sheds full of bone, and there were tons of collaborations and never-before-seen experiments. I'm a big fan of the festival for a number of reasons, because it is important to have an arts festival in Edinburgh that celebrates the people making work here, and because it has always been a fun, experimental place to play and perform. In 2010 or 11, it was the first place I got to try out my show before it went on to the Battersea Arts Centre, the South Bank, the Melbourne Fringe, and the Woodford Folk Festival. I wouldn't have made that piece if it wasn't for Hidden Door, which encourages working together across art forms and trying something new. I spent a day there with a microphone and decided we'd like to give you a taste of what one day at Hidden Door was kind of, sort of, like.
Hello, everybody.
It's the multicolor cultural laser. We travel the world for the boys and the girls. Casting pots of wonder and amazement.
Hi, I'm David Martin, and I am the founder and creative director of Hidden Door. I suppose it was 2009, really, when we first started trying to get people together to put on something a bit different in Edinburgh. And the idea was really about getting more than just like-minded people, but trying to find people who could, you know, widen it out a little bit. So it wasn't just artists, it was writers and musicians, and creating a platform to get all these different people to do something at the same time, in the same place, and see what kind of thing happened when we got all these different people together, basically.
How did this particular one come about? Because there was about 3 years off. Last time you had a Hidden Door Festival, I think it was in the Roxburgh House up near the Pleasance. And now we're here in the vault underneath St. James Street, which is one of the greatest venues I've been in and has been totally disused for many, many years. How did this happen?
The first Hidden Door was a bit of an accident. It wasn't supposed to be quite so big or, you know, all-encompassing as it was. It was originally just started off as an idea of a exhibition in a bar with some bands playing and a couple of poetry readings. So we got the old Roxy, as it became known, the Roxy Art House, and it imposed a scale upon the project, which was pretty big. So we went with it. We built a maze inside the Roxy, and it hid all the artworks inside the maze and created this whole thing where people had to explore and discover and kind of enter little doorways and kind of look into little nooks and crannies and find art. And that became what we thought was a much better format for engaging with art, but not only visual art, but also we kind of hid the stage, the actual music stage itself. You had to go through the maze to find the stage, and so the idea of exploring and discovering and finding was integral to Hidden Door. But the Roxy ran its course, and it actually became unusable as a venue after a while, and so we were looking for another place to do something, and it took us a long, long time to find somewhere that we could actually really turn into a venue. We got this great idea. I say we, it's a sort of a core group of organisers, if you like, a kind of a core team, we call it. And we were chatting and thinking about, we'd love to do something in a disused building, some kind of derelict space that was like falling apart. We'd have to wear hard hats and, like, you know, kind of cling on to the kind of floorboards and the rafters. And we thought this would be a fantastic idea to kind of try and bring to life a space that was dead. So we spent a little while looking for a space that we could use. And Edinburgh is a very difficult kind of city for that kind of thing. Most spaces get snapped up by real estate developers within a certain length of time. But this particular space, these 24 vaults and garages underneath Jeffrey Street, laying bare for 10 years with nothing happening in them at all. And because they're part of a property kind of development, which is really complicated, and there's been all sorts of legal wranglings over the site, so it's been laying empty for all this time. And we thought, we can maybe just sneak in. They might let us, you know, do us a favour, let us do something in the spaces. And so we seized this tiny little window of opportunity. We were told that by April, the spaces would be developed, or the builders at least would be in, the contractors would be moving their trucks on the site, and it would all be getting developed. So we thought, well, we'll push it to the limit, we'll do something at the very end of March, very beginning of April, we'll put on an event in the site before it gets changed forever and turned into something kind of corporate, soulless and horrible. And I thought, we could use these beautiful 24 volts, turn them into something hopefully pretty magical for a short period, and that's what we've tried to do.
And I love how it does have that resonance of the first festival where, like, the maze is, because you just so deeply want to explore. People are loving doing that thing that you're not really supposed to do, but everybody loves it, which is peeking behind curtains and opening doors just to see what's in there. And but in here, it's kind of encouraged, like, come on in, and it's really, really nice, and it's got that same kind of feeling as the original one had. It's a great space for it. When you talk about real estate and stuff, and like how hard it is to do stuff in this city, it is massively frustrating because, you know, having tried to do things here in the past myself, there's no places for it because it's such a small city center, and then you have the Fringe Festival that comes in once a year and kind of does the arty thing, and then the rest of the year all the people who live here don't really get a chance to participate and get together and do stuff. And that's why I think this festival is so important, is that that's part of the rationale behind doing this, is just to say, hey, we can exist. There are creative people living and working here that deserve to be celebrated and to have a beautiful space to work in, right?
Absolutely, that's exactly it. I mean, I think one of the things that's really struck us as we've tried to put this festival together was that there's this thing called the Buildings at Risk Register, which is like, it lists all the buildings in Scotland that are about to fall down or haven't been looked after properly. We got hold of this and we thought we could take one of these buildings, we could do some kind of crazy illegal kind of art rave in it, and it would be really exciting. We could, like, not even tell anyone, or else we could get some sort of permission, not really knowing really how it worked. And that didn't obviously transpire to anything remotely positive. It took us about a year and a half of trying all these different landlords and neglectful people who had these fantastic buildings, weren't doing anything with them. And eventually somebody put me in touch with the council. I'd always written the council off as a sort of, you know, absolutely no point in going to the council really. But I found a couple of people in the council who were willing to talk to me about empty buildings, and I got someone to tour me around the Royal Mile. Walked me around for an afternoon just pointing out, oh yeah, this building's empty, and yeah, this building's sort of, you know, a bit falling apart and going to be knocked down soon and turned into something else, and this building is also empty, no one knows who owns it, blah blah blah, etc, etc. And I sort of thought, wow, there's all these different spaces. But it, we looked at a few. We looked at one right outside Holyrood Palace at the very, very bottom, opposite the Parliament, which we thought would have been amazing to do a big event right outside the Parliament. But the ownership of it was to do with Holyrood Palace itself, and they said no. However, she also pointed out this group of arches, these vaulted spaces, and as soon as I saw them, I knew it would make an amazing experience to turn these vaults into exhibition spaces, installations, live music venues. Some of them are pretty big, they can fit 200 people in them. Some of them are tiny, you can just about stand up in them. And I thought, this is intriguing. It's right in the middle of the city, it's right next to Waverley train station. We've got to try it, we've got to go for it. And we did. And what was really interesting was that the council who owned the spaces were trying to sell them to these big real estate developers, as I said, but they were having all sorts of legal wranglings and difficulties. And so it turned out that nobody would quite say yes to our project because they didn't really feel they should be responsible, because they were hoping that someone else would own them other than themselves. The real estate developers wouldn't say yes, the council wouldn't say yes, so I just organised it anyway and told everyone that someone was going to say yes at some point. And by about 11 months in, I'd organised this thing. We had about 2 months still to go and we still didn't have any permission, but I'd kind of got all these people on board, over 100 artists, you know, there was a fantastic kind of groundswell of interest in this space. And we produced a little publication for the council saying, this is what we're going to do, and this is who's involved, and this is what they're going to do in the spaces. And it was so detailed, and it was so kind of meticulous, and it was so hopefully kind of inspiring that the council just said yes in the end. They kind of caved in, and the guy who had the sort of overall decision to make told me that he only said yes because he thought it would be far too much hassle to actually say no now that we'd got so many people on board the project. So we sort of tricked them into letting us do it. And I think that's the way you've got to do it in this city. It's like, there isn't a procedure for this kind of thing, there isn't an expectation that these dead spaces will be used. You've got to be ingenious, you've got to be devious, you've got to play them at their game, you've got to be kind of courageous, I suppose. There's this incredible sort of, you've got to have an incredible brass neck really to persuade anyone to do anything unusual in Edinburgh. Edinburgh is well known as a festival city. It has a fantastic thing happening in August, but the format is always the same. And Edinburgh loves its formats. It loves doing things the same way it's always done things. So that when you come to Edinburgh, you know exactly what you're going to get, you know exactly where you'll find whatever the things are that you can find. And it's hardly ever any different. And what we're trying to do is shake it up a little bit. The Fringe was originally that. It was originally people shaking it up who couldn't participate in the international festival. They set up their own thing on the side and they said, we're just going to do it anyway. We're going to do it our way. And it became incredibly popular, incredibly exciting, and a total game changer. But now the Fringe itself has become quite formulaic and very kind of set in its ways, and we need other fringes. We need other little rebellious rock and roll, punk rock kind of things happening on the side, and we just want to be one of those.
Yeah, and there's this real perception, I think, that's really frustrating, which is Edinburgh doesn't support Edinburgh art, and you know, like, it only can happen in August because so many tourists pour into the city. But actually, I was here last night, and both the music vaults, which I didn't realize were 200 people, were totally crammed. The uptake's been really good. This audience has come, right?
That's right. We had actually had over 600 people on site last night buying tickets for this event. And we've had, you know, what we're trying to do is sell tickets in the evening for live music performances and that kind of thing. But we also have it free during the day. And last weekend, when it opened, Saturday and Sunday during the day, we had over 2,500 people come through the doors. People love this stuff, and there's a real demand for it in Edinburgh.
Harriet Yarrington, and this is Vault 15 at Hidden Door Festival.
Hi, Harriet. I'm really enjoying these sculptures, very reptilian sculptures. How did you end up creating this piece for Vault number 15?
These skulls are actually turtle skulls. They're made initially from fabric skulls that I made using doilies. And it was the idea that I would have bronze that looked like textiles. So something that's really kind of old and discarded now is these like crocheted circles that normally in like Victorian houses under a vase or something, you find loads of them in charity shops and things like that. And it's like this unnecessarily beautiful thing that we don't really use anymore. And then I wanted to juxtapose something that's very feminine, which is the doily, with a very like hard masculine material, which is the bronze, but it's also a material that's losing the amount of people that would use it now. So both of these things are getting slightly forgotten. And then I'm trying to bring into that also like conservation of both Scottish wildlife and just like international wildlife as well. And so that's why I made a turtle skull, because they're increasingly dying out, and I could go really on and on about turtles because I love them so much.
Did you have this idea of creating these particularly for this space? How did you react to the brief of kind of putting your work inside this relatively gloomy yet atmospheric space?
Well, for the like the small skulls, I had the idea of like tucking them into the wall so that they really just like became part of this backdrop. And then with the turtle skulls, like there, it was when I was like researching different things to do with turtles that I found this cave where turtles swim in and then they can't figure out how to come back out again. And they sink to the bottom and like their skeletons are perfectly preserved, like just sitting in the sand. So that was what I was looking at with like having the sand in the center of the space with these turtle skulls. If you look at the evolution of skulls, a turtle skull is the least evolved. I think it's called like an anapsid skull. And the way that you can tell is like the number of holes it has in the skull. So like its nose and then its eye sockets is all it has. So it's not had to evolve really, that structure. All a turtle has done from like prehistoric turtles is get smaller. And they're still massive. So it's like this really ancient, simple form because it never needed to do anything more. And they're really beautiful.
Have you ever had an actual bell turtle skull in your hands?
Well, like, I've held the actual skull I worked from for making these, because that's in the museum, because it's just in their archive. So these are archives that just sit unused. And it's this thing of, like, you know, during the Victorian era, people collected, like, really collected specimens and destroyed huge numbers of different species. And then all they do now is sit in an archive in some dark, dingy room in a museum, and we don't even see them. So I think it'd be really good for conservation to, like, make use of these archives for artwork and then bring back people being aware of these archives as a resource to educate about wildlife.
Hi,
Hi, I'm Paddy. I'm from the Riot Project. I've been doing a UV show and a workshop here at Hidden Door.
I poked my head in here and I saw something I didn't expect to see, which was a lot of young people standing around and doing a bit of acting and improvisation. I was very surprised to find it, led by a kilted man. We have a couple of the young people here today. Can you just say your names and tell us where you're from?
Hello, I'm Michel. I'm from Luxembourg.
I'm Mike and I'm also from Luxembourg.
What is the Riot Project and how does it work?
The Riot Project is a theatre company that does very immersive audience interactive theatre. I'm much more interested in getting everyone on stage involved in doing something rather than kind of having a show up here and an audience down there. And my friend Harry does TEFL classes, so he brought this big bunch of Luxembourgers to my workshop and we did some improv. It was really great. We started from having not done any before, I think, to doing scenes and people enjoying it and laughing. And yeah, it was fun.
So what were some of the things that you guys tried out improv? What's a good beginner's improv game?
Anything that focuses on having a really good time. The more fun you're having, the more relaxed you are, the more exciting everything gets. So if you're getting really worried and nervous, then you'll do less and everyone will be like, oh, I hated that. But if you're like, hey, this is fun and easy, then you can start building it up more and slowly. We played a game where you had a boss and these two employees, and like the employees made faces at the boss. I think the guys all really enjoyed that. And then we did some parent and teenager scenes. There'd be a teenager who comes home late and the parents would be like, hey, where have you been?
That's great. What did you guys do during the session?
Well, I played the boss in that game.
How did it feel to be the boss?
Strange. You have to look all the time. You have to talk, open yourself up. And it's hard, but I really enjoyed it the whole time.
What I really enjoyed was the parenting thing when I personally was a parent, because I really enjoy going out of myself and I could really scream at other people. And it's just funny because you can't do that like outside, but it's really funny to go outside of yourself.
My name is Alicia and I'm one of the people who organizes the Hidden Door Hidden Cinema Space.
It's a great space. Have you been enjoying putting on films in an abandoned vault?
Oh yeah, definitely. Even, you know, just getting to know people who are organizing all the different festivals around Edinburgh, is that has been a great experience itself. Plus, you know, creating this space, getting just even little bits, you know, like getting the furniture together, arranging it together, and then seeing people finding themselves in a space. It's been quite emotional seeing people enjoying the screenings.
I saw some beautiful short films there over the weekend and I thought they were really good, and it was just such a nice and cozy place to sit. You also organized an event in there as well. What was it called again?
It was sort of like a celebration of community media and participatory video.
And what were some of the films that were shown there?
Well, my event was called Video Activism Night, and I focused on a participatory video making and the history of community media in the UK. And I also looked at some films from all over the world and how ordinary people use video and media to fight for human rights. So yeah, that was brilliant.
So there's like a combination of documentary stuff, or is it just kids with cameras going out into the world, or?
It's not really a straightforward documentary filmmaking. It's more about people taking up cameras, going on streets and fighting for human rights. So we looked at Arab Spring, at forced evictions around the world, and there's different organizations around the world that train people on how to use cameras to fight for human rights. And there is also well-established organizations in Scotland, like, you know, Screen Education Edinburgh, there's Institute of Local Television. So I just kind of got films from different places, and we look at archives, we look at things that are happening around the world nowadays, and I think that venue just is a perfect place to screen that kind of stuff.
Did you have some talks as well?
Yeah, we had guests. So we had Joel Vanett, who originally he set up Pilton Video in Edinburgh. So we screened some of his films, first films made in Edinburgh. And you know, those films were highlighting the problems of social housing crisis back in the 80s in Edinburgh. And those were participatory films.
So how would that have been made back in the 80s? How did that
film? Back in the 80s, Joel set up Pelton video, and he trained people on how to use camcorders, and those people went out around the housing estate and filmed those issues, and, you know, films the...
Like evictions, filmed getting evicted and stuff?
No, they filmed the short film that we looked at, which was called It's Now or Never. There was a guy basically showing the state of his house, the state of his sink in particular. And then, you know, it was all about people getting together and fighting against the council. And the original idea comes from, you know, from the 60s, from Canada. It's called Challenge for Change. There's a history behind this, participatory filmmaking and social change. And I would really like people to kind of unite, and perhaps professional filmmakers and activists, if we could get together and think how we could work together to, you know, make the resources more accessible to the communities, so people could maybe present their issues visually.
My name's Jenny Smith, and I'm a visual artist based in Edinburgh, and I'm showing Leaving No Trace, which is a short 3-minute film at the Hidden Doors Festival, and it's a meditation on light as a drawing medium and the passage of time. I made it as a result of residency that I did in a Buddhist monastery in Northumbria, and I left a film in a corridor, and it recorded a shadow that moved and disappeared over a period of an hour. Then it was edited to condense that down into 3 minutes. Just as the shadow disappeared, the gong started to ring in the monastery. So partly it's just serendipitous, as it was, and partly I edited it to focus on that element of the sort of moving shadow. Normally your eye wouldn't see the shadow, but with speeded up filming, you can actually just very, but it's still very slow and very meditative. So it was meant to sort of represent the sense of place that the monastery that I was staying at, but I thought it was ideal for Hidden Doors because Hidden Doors is an old vault, and the work's very much about the interaction with people and places, and obviously that's what's happening here as well, so I thought it was a good place to show it.
Yeah, yeah, it is beautiful, and just something about the way it works with the you know, one of my first impression of it was just sitting there and watching the light just stay very still, and then, you know, maybe a minute in or 30 seconds in, it starts to move. And I remember I just gasped a little bit. I was very excited for that little tiny bit of movement, and it was very meditative. And then when it shows at the end of the film that it was recorded at a monastery, I thought, yeah, of course it was. And it's just imbued with that very relaxed spirit. And how do you mean that you left a film there? You left a camera there? You left...
Yes, I had I was artist in residence for 2 months, and I became... It was in October in Northumbria, and the light's really strong at that time of year. So I kept noticing shadows appearing and moving, and I thought it sort of fitted with the whole sort of Zen thing about transience. So I was taking lots of photographs of shadows, and then I thought, I had a video camera with me, so I thought I'll just set the camera up in the corridor and let it record what happens. And I've made several films, and that's what I always do. I like the camera to be still and the movement to be happening around it. And so, yeah, I had no idea, really. I'd shot lots of different footage while I was there, and it just so happened that this footage, you know, when I played it back, I just thought, wow, this is incredible. In the actual footage, there were quite a lot of people going through that corridor. There were a few monks. You saw one. You might have noticed, like, one pair of feet, which was a monk in his robes walking along. But there were more than that, but we edited them out to keep that sense of stillness, really. So it was just about the light.
It was great. If I didn't know better, I would have thought it was made bespoke just for this festival, because it works so well in that room with the concrete and the just the sort of the stonework and that little bit of light coming in. It was really beautiful.
Hey everyone, this is Graham.
Can you tell us a little bit about the piece that you and Martin Belk have created?
So the piece is called Outdoors. It's based on a short story that I'd written. When Hidden Door initially put forward the call for submissions, the theme was regeneration, so the story fit with that, and being a bit greedy, I decided rather than just read it, I wanted to have a full installation based on it. So on the back of that, we've created an installation consisting of 2 films, a sound piece, various objects, and there's going to be a reading programme throughout the day. So I'm going to read the story at 4 o'clock, and then Martin will be doing his talk, Crime, Art, Crime, Punishment, from 4:30, based on his experiences working with young offenders in Pullman Prison.
Yeah, so there's some excerpts and some bits of found, I guess, text that he kind of curated that came from his work in the prisons and working with prisoners in places, yeah?
Yeah, there's bits and pieces that have come through from Pullman, quotes from the boys, and some, yeah, various other things that have informed it. I mean, the story is based on young offenders working at this farm that's trying to regenerate, trying to up its ethical credentials. So it's the idea of both the farm and the boys themselves are trying to regenerate, and based on the experiences I had supporting Martin doing the creative writing programme in Pullman. So there's lots of little bits feeding in from that.
And I love the image that I've seen with the eggs, where there's eggs labelled good and bad eggs, which of course with the farm and the whole idea of like there's some good people, there's bad people, there's good eggs and bad eggs. It's a really nice image and idea, and you've taken that pretty far, and there's little bits of paper coming out of there. How did that get all put together?
Playing around with the idea of people going to prison, sort of mentality of being too far gone, and the way that sort of labels will work, like the media will want you to believe that there's evil people, there's people that are too far gone down the line that can just be written off. However, Martin's work in Pullman is the idea that there's no wasted life, there's nobody left behind. So what we've done to respond to that is we've got 180 eggs, each 90 labelled good, 90 labelled bad, and they've all got quotes coming from them, whether either hopeful or they're despairing. And the idea is that, which is the greatest tragedy, is it a despairing egg that's been labelled bad, or is it a hopeful egg that's also been labelled bad, or is it a despairing egg that's actually thinking something better of itself? So it's tying with all that.
How will the live events affect the visual, the recorded elements?
The video loop will still be running in the background, the one sort of abstract video loop that's got found footage from of chickens and various other things that will be running continually whilst the readings are going on. And yeah, the other film's more of a linear narrative. You have to sit with your headphones on, so that won't be going on. Although people, if they get bored of the reading, I guess they can go and sit with their headphones if they want.
Hi, it's Ed Stack here, putting on some music at Hidden Door Collaborative, Two Arch Extravaganza with 10 bands, or 10 music artists to be precise, and 10 visual artists too, across the two arches, hooked up by a single monitor, and all of the mix from both stages is going out through the PA, so it should be quite insane. There's actually a bar in between the stages, so if you get thirsty during the 3-hour-long feature-length performance, then you can have a wee drink. Yeah. There's also plenty else going on, but yeah, we've got pretty interesting visual monitoring, which the audience can see as well, so pretty excited.
It's 10 bands going back and forth between two separate vaults, these little compartments here at Hidden Door, and it's going to just go straight for 3 hours, right?
That's correct, yeah. 7:30, Matthew Collings, who played here at the opening night, will be opening with his crazy noise with ping pong balls inside upturned amplifiers. And Ben Seal will give us some folk with Bella Hardy and Inga Thompson. Awesome bill with Ben's unique, slightly digital touch. Then we've got Small Feet, Little Toes. Rachel Anderson's been on Culture Laser before. Awesome voice. Going into Beds, which is a collaboration within a collaboration of Babis Theocharis, who's in a few great bands from Greece. Stephen Patterson, Masters from Edinburgh Uni at Sound Design. Myself on the drums. And Dave Wheatley of And the Moose came in second, who will come on after us.
Yeah, and it's sounding so good. You've been involved, you know, I guess it's kind of like myself as well, with Hidden Door since, you know, the early days. How has it evolved? How does it feel to be back involved in a Hidden Door project?
It feels great to be back. We're just doing the one night because it was such a huge undertaking to have 20 artists doing just one night live in this way. But yeah, we were inspired by the second one, especially with the five bands, realizing that you could actually pull it off with five bands on five stages. Really delighted with Hidden Door for giving us the opportunity and funding all of that essentially big experiment, which came off really well live. Feel really better prepared this time, but Dave's done a great job, especially with the site and a whole bunch of, you know, minor politics around it show that it's a festival with a buzz.
And the other thing that we're doing tonight, Ed, is speaking of collaboration, I guess you've got a whole new platform that you're going to be launching tonight and talking about and discussing. I'm going to be chairing the discussion, but do you want to tell people a little bit about that?
We've been working with Napier University, developing a collaboration, visualized collaboration site, where you can create work and also promote it kind of simultaneously on the same platform, and then release it for your fans to get for free, and your best fans to will crowdfund the creative process. So it's quite an interesting model.
Thanks, Ed. Some of the music you've heard on this episode was from Beds, who performed at the Mega Decagram event. You can find out more about Decagram on decagram.co. And if you want to get more live Hidden Door action, they're doing a big fundraiser at the Liquid Rooms. That's on the 17th of May. It starts at 6 o'clock. Loads of bands will be there. Great activity. And they really, really need the help and support for the fundraiser. So get yourself down to the Liquid Rooms for the big Hidden Door extravaganza there on the 17th of May. Thanks to everyone who appeared on this episode and to all the many volunteers and performers and artists without whom none of this would have happened. I hope you all rest well and that we'll see you again soon. You can see what you missed at Hidden Door by checking out their website, hiddendoorblog.org. And we'll leave you now with this track from Numbers Are Futile, live at Hidden Door, presented by Decagram.
What do we do? Casting pods of wonder and